Blog Talk Radio.
Show number 32, October 1st, 2012. And as we move into the scary month of October and Halloween's at the end, we've got some great shows lined up. We got actually three shows that have a theme for Halloween, and I hope you will keep tuned in to our shows. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm your host, Tom Riddell, and waiting to come on the air, here is Robin Eduardo. A brief intro to today's show is we're having Annie Wilder on, and she wrote, once again, back to the Halloween theme, a book called Trucker Ghost Stories. She'll be on to talk to us about the people and the stories that are in that book. It was written by several people throughout the country, and I believe over in other countries, too, that helped her compile that book. So we're looking forward to listening to Annie when she comes on about quarter after the hour. Also, you can find us over at tomriddell.com/blog. That's where you've got all of the reviews that I've done over the course of the last 32 shows. You can go over there and read the reviews of all the authors and listen to the show in the upper left-hand corner. You will find a Blog Talk Radio player, and you can click on your favorite author up there and have a listen as you read the reviews. Also, if you go over to the Blog Talk Radio site, you can find the link at the top of the page for the Facebook link. Go ahead and click on that. Go over and like us. And we are also on Twitter. You can contact us, of course, the old-fashioned way, with email at twl11@yahoo.com. We get several emails. A lot of those emails are in relation to books that authors want to bring on the show, and they're requesting interviews. And we will be opening up the session for December through March on October 29th. So hold all of your requests until that time. And when that date comes around, we'll post it on the Facebook page and let you know here on the air when that opens up so you can get your request in. If you get it in too soon, we may not get to it until then because we're trying to be fair here and opening it up to everybody at once so we can go in there and decide the authors that will be on for the next session, which is, once again, December through March. Upcoming guest authors in the next show on October 15th would be Jake Carter. And, well, I'm sorry, that's not the author's name. The name of the book is Jake Carter and the Nightmare Gallery, and it was written by Kevin Folliard, and he was on our show last year, and he'll be on again with this new book. I really enjoyed reading it, and I think you will too. So stay tuned for that. And, of course, as I always put in at this time, a plug for the Magic Pen Web Design offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Magic Pen Web Design promises that your website will be simple in content and easy to navigate while also delivering an effective eye-popping design that will attract an interest to the books you write along with the other products or services that you offer. Magic Pen Web Design promises to work with you and to explore an option package that will be the most affordable for you. So go on over, fill out a free estimate over at magicpenwebdesign.com. and let Magic Pen help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. And now we get into caller instructions. And when Annie comes on, you can give us a call at 626-213-5613 or toll free at 877-878-1436. So that's the way you get onto the program, and I hope to hear from you. Our lines are open. We have a full switchboard here that you can fill right up. So go ahead and do that. Now I would like to bring in my co-host, the lovely and talented Robin Eduardo. You never get tired of that, do you, Robin?
Who would?
Yeah, it's really nice. So are you.
Thanks.
So, I know that both of us have been struggling with some issues here, and I've been trying to keep focused on the job at hand, which would be the review of the books, and also doing my webpage design, which I'm very happy to say is starting to take off in a positive direction, which means that it's starting to grow, and I'm getting clients, so that's a good thing for me. So what's happening in your world?
There's not really too much going on. I'm still plugging away at the revisions of No Redemption for the Dead.
Ah, okay.
And that's that's just forever ongoing.
Who's helping you with that, by the way? Do you have an editor, or are you just going through it yourself?
Well, Eric Shellman has been helping me out.
Oh, okay.
Beta reading it for me, kind of helping me out. He went over a couple of chapters and, you know, kind of guided me on a few things and pointed out a few things that I had overlooked. So he was a big help and kind of put his foot up my ass and got me going again. So I really needed that. Unfortunately,
well, I wish he'd come over and put his foot up my ass.
I know, because he's really a great cheerleader, and I think everybody needs somebody like that behind them, you know, pushing them along.
Exactly.
But how long do you think it'll be?
How long do you think it'll be, Robin, before that thing actually gets published?
You know, I'm really, really hoping that I could try to get it done before the end of this year. That's the goal. I know I've said that before, and it does sound like a broken record, but I really would like to get it done already. I mean, I'm sick of it. That's just how I feel about it at this point, is I'm just sick of looking at it and rereading it over and over and over again. And I do think that there is a point in time that comes where you can actually over-edit it, if that makes any sense. And some people might say, oh, well, maybe it needs more editing. Who knows? But as far as what I can do for it, it's reaching that point where I need to step back and put it in somebody else's hands. So
right,
I'm getting close to that point.
I gave myself a little bit of boost as far as getting back to my novel by purchasing a MacBook Air. And I thought by buying that at the tune of about $1,500 that I would be able to go out into the living room instead of sitting in my office and kind of relax and just, you know, pick along at it as I go along. And I've looked at the story and I've read through the story, but it's like, you know, I haven't been in the story for so long that I'm actually going to have to sit down and probably read the last two or three chapters and
just get my head back into it.
Like I would if you were going to watch a movie. You ever go back and watch a movie to try to get a feel of what the movie's all about when you've seen it before? So that's the way it is with me, so I can appreciate where you're at. And I'm at 70,000 words, and I'm shooting for 100, but I know it's going to go over. And hopefully, it probably won't get done this year. I wanted to have completed it this year, but obviously with everything that's been happening, I haven't been able to do that. So Yeah. I'm going to shoot for next year, and when it gets done, it gets done. And I, as far as the word count, I'm just going to go with it. Just going to write the story, yeah. let the story tell itself, and then worry about the word count afterwards and do some editing from that point on. Because I think a lot of us get caught up in the word count of the books that we read instead of yeah. actually just getting the story down. I think that's very yeah. important.
Yeah. Yeah, I was pretty obsessed about word count for a while there, too, because I was, you know, told, well, you know, it shouldn't be a novelette. You need to shoot for a novel. And then it was at 60,000, like approximately around 60,000 words. And it was like, oh, well, you need like 80,000 words and 100,000 words. And then
where are you at now, Robin? What?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I keep adding and then subtracting. So,
yeah.
And when I subtract, I am like a flenser with a whale. I just remove huge chunks of fat all at once. And I'm real quick to hit that delete button instead of like kind of clicking and saving it to another place. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So I'm kind of all over the place. Right now, I think I'm around 78,000, so almost
okay.
80,000.
You're
yeah.
a little bit over what I am.
Yeah, I'm around there. I mean, I need to open it up and actually look at it because I have a couple different versions of the same thing. Because I've kind of told myself I need to keep the original file. Well, it's not the original file, but the last file that I saved and work from that one, and that way any changes that I do make, and I need to be able to go back and retrieve stuff because I'm just like a. It's like going to the hairdresser and they cut too much out. You know, that's what I do.
You gotta grow it back. Growing it back
yeah,
takes
yeah,
time.
Yeah, so yeah, I put extensions back in.
Okay,
I put extensions back in my novel.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
So.
It's a good analogy, and I think that a lot of us get caught up in the mechanics of the writing too sometimes.
Yeah,
and I know that editing is good. What I'll do is I'll sit there and look at a sentence and see if I can color it up with a few words that normally it doesn't really flow out of my vocabulary every day. So I'll look for words, which is also interesting to look at the, voice recognition software now that types for you. And that's a problem with me because, like with you, you know, for a while you were complaining of saying "om" a lot. Well, I think that I would probably do that a lot in my story, and it bothers me because, you know what, eventually you got to go back and edit it anyway. So
right.
I don't see the benefit in using that software. At first it sounds interesting, but when you really look at it, you still have to do the work. So anyway... looks like we've got our guest host or guest author here on the switchboard waiting to come on. That would be Annie Wilder, and I will get on with the book, which is Trucker Ghost Stories. It was written by many people who have driven the roadways of this country and other countries, edited by Annie Wilder, and published by Tom Doherty Associates, LLC, in 2012. You may purchase it at Amazon.com. Kindle, and you can visit the author at anniewilder.com. In a uniquely entertaining book by a rising star, here are uncanny true tales of haunted highways, weird encounters, and legends of the road. It may have happened to you. It's happened to almost everyone who's ever driven down a highway at night or in the fog or snow. Something suddenly appears, a flash of movement, a shadow. What was it? It could be, as the true stories in this book attest, a ghost. That is what Amazon had to write in their little review or their little snippet there. And what I had to say was, everyone loves a ghost story. It makes for interesting chatter around a campfire at night, or a spooky tale can really take hold during the course of a late evening thunderstorm. Mostly, we become very interested in the telling of a few really spooky encounters. They'll usually give us a little giggle and a fun little fright, but then we move on in our lives and we don't even give them much thought anymore, unless you are the person who encountered the anomaly that led to the story. To you, the experience was very real and in some cases very disturbing or frightening. This book is about those people and the weird and ghostly experiences that they had on the road. You can dismiss them as a product of an overactive imagination, or you can keep an open mind to the possibilities that there are things that happen to us in life that can't be explained, and that these people should at least be listened to with respect, and a certain amount of consideration should be given to their stories. There are a few stories in this book that are shared by several different people, stretched out in states and countries miles apart, that tell of strange lights that were encountered during their travels. Chased by a Light was one of those stories that happened in Hobart, Tasmania, with a red light followed a vehicle during a long drive one night. It seemed to have an intelligence as it moved alongside the vehicle and even jumped fence posts as it went along in its pursuit of staying next to the traveling vehicle. Weird Light in Toronto was another story that told of a hovering white light that two people encountered while out in their car one night. Some of my other favorite stories include The Cross on the Car, a graveyard tale where a wooden cross that had been thrown back into the graveyard reappeared on top of the teenager's car hours later. Turnpike to the Twilight Zone, a trip down a highway that seemed to have been placed down from somewhere out of this world. And Michelin Tire Man, an I-94, which tells of some sort of being which attaches itself to a vehicle in traffic in order to help direct some kids home in the throes of a Minnesota blizzard. Now, many of these stories have a common denominator. The same experiences were shared by more than one person somewhere out on the road. For me, this makes the book a credible account of what has to be considered a truthful telling of some possible paranormal experiences. Editor Annie Wilder deserves much credit for compiling these stories and presenting to us some very interesting tales of the road. And with that, I would like to welcome Annie to the show. Let me push the magic button here and bring her on from Hastings, Minnesota. How are you doing tonight, Annie?
I am doing great. Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Robin, for having me on the show.
It's great to have you here. Robin, by the way, is in New Jersey, so she is not in Minnesota with us.
Okay. Well, it's nice to meet you, Robin. I actually met Tom, what was it, Tom, about a year and a half ago?
Yeah, we were over at your house there in Hastings, and we actually did an investigation, and we thoroughly enjoyed your home, your hospitality, and the stories that you have to tell. And I would hope that everybody gets a chance at some point in their lives to go to a haunted house. And I know you have events down there that that you hold every periodically. I believe they're tea parties, right, Annie?
I hold haunted tea parties, and tea season is actually wrapping up this year. It starts in April and it ends in October, and almost every year I have a few tea parties in November because there's a waiting list.
Sure.
So haunted tea parties and then some ghost classes, and just this year I started working with a couple who, the wife is a trance medium, and so they hold seances and I host the seance. So those have been very interesting and a new experience for me in my home.
Very
all that,
cool.
All that information is on my Facebook page.
Very cool. And I think the last time we were down there, we actually had a full moon, if I remember right, because I did take a picture. And we have close to what I think is a full moon out there now. And it's very exciting time of year, especially with Halloween, to be involved in a lot of things that you do, especially with several books that you've written, the last one being, of course, The Trucker Ghost Stories. Could you give us a reading, an excerpt from your book?
Yeah, and I thought that was so cool, Tom, that you asked that, because that's the first time I've ever been asked to read an excerpt from one of my books on a radio interview. So,
well, that's why we're the best, right, Robin?
That's right.
Okay.
Go ahead,
well,
Rob. Go ahead, Danny.
I thought I would start with just reading one of the very short stories in the book, and then if we have time, I'll read one more short thing. But this story, and these are all true stories sent in, except for the section of the book called Legends and Lore, and that's when people just sent in stories from their part of the world, different legends that they have heard or that they know of. Okay, but this is in the Helpful Spirits section of the book. This is a trucker named Jim Bradshaw. I was driving into Texas from Oklahoma on US 52, I think, but not sure of that. My father was an OTR driver who died in 2000 in a rollover when a load of scrap iron shifted. And an OTR driver, for anyone who doesn't know, is over-the-road driver. Anyway, I was pushing hard and fighting to stay up. I had woken up multiple times to rumble strips, but decided to push on no matter what. But as I completed a pass and was merging back to my right, my father was sitting in the seat beside me. He told me there was a rest area just across the Texas border. I said it would be full and I couldn't stop anyway. He said, well, then I'll stop you. I awoke 4 hours later at a rest area just across the Texas border, parked perfectly. An unknown text on my phone read, no load is worth your life. Love, Dad. I swear this to be true. So that's one of my favorite stories in the book. There were actually quite a few stories that had that same kind of theme of getting some sort of intervention action from a loved one in spirit to help them out or take them out of harm's way or literally save their life. So that was cool. Mm-hmm. That was a text message. And then I worked with a trucker. Early on in this project, I knew that I wanted to get a truck driver on board because I wanted the credibility that it would lend to the project. I wanted someone that I could talk to about what was real and authentic and made sense, and just to be like someone to consult with who could tell me what's actually going on and what's cool, what's not cool. And I was extremely lucky. I found out about a guy named Terry Aldershoff, a former trucker who is now a full-time writer, saw a posting that I had looking for stories for the book. And he submitted two stories, and they were so excellent that I asked him if he would consider writing the foreword for the book. And he said he would give it a try, and he sent in a foreword that, in my opinion, was just knocked it out of the ballpark. It was so right on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I will... Did you agree, Tom? Did you like that, too?
Yeah, I did. I really did enjoy that.
All right. Well, instead of reading the foreword, I'll just read the last paragraph, which is Terry's bio, basically. I have driven professionally for over 33 years and have traveled nearly 6 million miles behind the wheel of a semi-truck. I've hauled everything from artichokes to elephants in and into the contiguous 48 states, 3 provinces of Canada, and farther north, including the Yukon and Alaska. I am a real truck driver. The stories my colleagues and I share with you here are our stories, for we have lived them. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that, as I mentioned in my review, that there seems to be a lot of the stories from people who have never met that connect in some sort of a theme with something they've seen on the road, as I indicated with the lights that seem to be seen, which are not usually brake lights or headlights or any other kind of light that you might find out there normally on the highways, but there's something different and there's something mysterious about them, as I had spoken about being sort of like with an intelligence attached to it. I mean, what kind of a light could jump fence post? I mean, it just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen that way.
That story I thought was really eerie. And that was the story from Tasmania. And the fellow who sent it in, you know, he had a long drive at night on a road that he knew was boring. He wouldn't encounter any traffic. He wasn't in a place where it's like, oh, I'm freaked out, you know, whatever. He just happened to notice this, and it sort of happened to get weirder and weirder, and then, you know, he tested to see if it was somebody's brake lights or a reflection of his own lights, and turned off his lights, and it was still following him, and it just kept escalating, and that was, I thought, a really, really well-told story.
It was very interesting.
Yeah, a lot of suspense, right? Yeah. And I actually noticed, you know, when these stories were coming in, I was looking at them with an eye of putting together a book, you know, so it was more like, okay, which section would this fit in? Where are we at as far as word count? You know, do we have stories that are similar to this? If so, is it different enough that we can include both of them? And if not, is there one that would make a better fit for the book than the other, better choice? But once the book came out, and I started looking through the book again, and I didn't expect this. This is my third book, but when I started looking through the book with the perspective of someone who's going to be interviewed about it, it was like I started seeing connections that I hadn't even realized were there when I was, you know, assembling the book. I saw that in many of the stories, there was a common experience, and that was that there was some sort of gateway. There was some sort of something that indicated that things were getting strange. And
right.
Oftentimes in these stories, it was the weather. It was either weird clouds coming up or blinding snowstorm or fog that shouldn't be there. A couple of the stories, the weirdness took place in the woods, you know, at deep woods. So I thought that was kind of interesting, too. Like, I do believe in spirits, and I believe in other strange experiences that people have.
Sure.
But I thought it made it seem more credible to me that some of these things seem to happen, as you said, to people in different parts of the world and different situations. There are some common things that people experience. And these are the kind of stories I love.
Yeah, like we know you've written other books on the subject of ghosts, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But why this book, Annie, about truck drivers? What inspired you to write it?
Well, I had written my first book, which is a book about living in a haunted house. And then I got a contract to write a second book, a follow-up to my first book, which involved you know, research, and I was going to include photographs, and I had many psychics come through my house and paranormal investigation groups. So all that was going to be in there. And that book got blocked by the spirits, in my opinion. The first book, you were talking about earlier in the show, getting this new laptop or something so you could go out in your living room. My first book I wrote in 3 months. I came home from work, I ate something, I went and sat on the couch, comfortable pillow behind my back, and just typed until it was time to go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, it seemed like the spirits in the house and even the house itself were supporting the book energetically. When I tried to do a follow-up, it felt blocked, and I worked on it for 9 months, and no matter what I wrote, it was terrible. It was just so heavy. It had no flow, and I sent it to a girlfriend. I'm like, pardon my language, does this suck? And she wrote back, yeah, it's not working. I'm like, that's not good. I've got 3 months left to turn in a 50,000-word manuscript. And so I proposed instead a book of family ghost stories, which I put together and met my deadline. But while I was writing the book of family ghost stories, I got the idea for Tucker Ghost Stories. And I was so wrapped up. But I was so ready to get started on it. And so when the second book, you know, was done and sent in and things like that, I was like, all right, now I'm going to do this Tucker Ghost Story. And everyone that I told about it, you know, seemed to really dig the idea. People wanted to get on board. Somebody offered to publish it before I'd even started, you know, shipping it or shopping it around. And somebody wanted to do an audio book. And so all systems go, except I couldn't get any truckers to tell their stories. I knew there were stories, but I couldn't get them to go on record, even if they could use a fake name or no name. Mm-hmm. And I may not have answered your question exactly. The actual idea came to me because when I was, the summers when I was 13, 14, and 15, I worked at the sand plant where my dad was a manager, and I answered the phone and typed invoices for the truckers. And I like the trucker world. I like the color of it. Around the time that I was finishing up my second book, I was watching Ice Road Truckers and Deadliest Catch and the sort of uber-masculine TV shows, you know, TV shows about uber-masculine professions. And I thought, oh, wow, I have a perfect idea of a mashup of those stories, paranormal and truckers, you know. And so, and I thought back to, you know, I had one of the truckers that I knew when I was working for my dad had told me a ghost story, and it was a really good one. He was a good storyteller, and I tried to contact him and was unable to track him down. And I'm pretty good at tracking people down or tracking down information. And so I went to bed one night. This is about 3 or 4 days into my search for him, because I wanted to see if he would tell his story for the book and write an introduction to the book. And I had a dream that night, and I do get cool information in my dreams. I pay attention to it. And in this dream, I was in a white room with nothing in it except a door, and the walls were sparkling. And I was standing there, and I thought, I wonder why I'm in here. And then the door opened up, and this young, skinny man with shiny black hair, you know, slicked back in a pompadour hairdo like Elvis, stepped into the room. And he looked at me and made eye contact, and he nodded. And then he stepped back out through the door. And as soon as I woke up, I thought to myself, that was Bill Sykes, this trucker that I'd been trying to find. I didn't recognize him in the dream because he was a young man. And when I knew him, he was in his mid to late 40s at least, maybe early 50s. And that day I got a call back from one of the people I had left a message with, and it was a family member who said that he had passed away 4 years earlier. So I did dedicate the book to him anyway.
It's quite interesting. Let me cut in here a little bit here. It looks like we got some sort of a glitch problem on the site, and I'm hoping that it doesn't translate to your show not being aired. It does show us being on air, but I don't have the streaming time left. It looks like the clock has stopped. So what I would ask everybody out there to do, if you'd like to give us a call at 626-213-5613, or 877-878-1436. That's the toll-free number if you'd like to give us a call on the show and talk to Annie. But I would ask that if you are listening to the show, give us a call. Let us know that we're being heard out there. And, Robin, I don't know if you have a laptop available or if Annie, you happen to be near a computer at all. But have a check and check the site. But stay with us, and maybe somebody else will call us and let us know. But anyway, Annie, getting on to the research of your book, what criteria did you use to weed out the uninteresting stories or the ones that didn't seem credible? Do you have any kind of a formula for doing anything like that?
The formula was pretty simple, I guess. I never thought of it as a formula, but if I liked the book, or, I'm sorry, if I liked the story, if it grabbed me and kept my attention, it could go in the book. And there were, and if it fit the criteria, I mean, there were some stories submitted that were cool, spooky stories, but like about haunted houses and things like that. So I always suggested to people that they, if they had a story that I thought was well written or was a cool story, and I could suggest any other venue where they could submit it, I always did that. And there were, there was one story that came in as a true story that I felt was a better fit for the legends and lore section of the book. So that's where it went. And I didn't go any further than that because legends and lore story, and I had read different versions of this same legend. So And it's like, let's put this in the legends and lore section. So that was my criteria. There was one story that it seemed like it was a good story, but the person, I told people they could either email me the story, and these are not, you know, professional writers. I really wanted this to, I did a very light edit, and I had in my contract that I wanted a very light edit. I didn't want, because the storytellers are talking in their own voice, I didn't want it to sound like perfect King's English. You know, it's like this should represent the vernacular and of the people telling the stories. And so I'm pretty happy with that has been mentioned in reviews, and the people who are mentioning it seem to understand why it was done that way. Like they're
right.
in support of it rather than criticizing. So that's cool.
Right.
But yeah, there was one story that seemed like a better fit for my Tea Party guests than truckers. So, you know, I'm in contact with her, the storyteller, still, and have
sure.
some contact info. But it didn't go in the book because it was too more delicate and ephemeral and things like that.
Right. Hey, Robin, you've been kind of quiet there.
I was listening to everything that she was saying, and I wanted to touch on to get back to you. I did confirm that everything's fine on this site, and it's playing okay on my end. So
okay.
I guess everything will be okay.
The clock has stopped, but not on my wall. So we'll kind of go with that anyway, and we should be fine.
End, it's at 24 minutes and 2 seconds. So
okay.
whatever.
Yeah,
so we're moving on.
Okay.
But I do like the idea that you did, you know, that some of the stories, that it's in the vernacular. I think that's more genuine, that it, you know, people can relate to it.
Right on.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. I think people mm-hmm. enjoy it more, that they can connect to it, and it sets the tone and the mood. And I like the idea that, you know, that it's truckers. My
Thank
husband's
you.
A trucker, so of course I would love it.
Oh, yes. Any stories, and almost all the truckers that I've spoken to do have some. Well, it wasn't a ghost, but here's what happened, whatever. It's like, so, yeah, if your husband has any stories he'd care to share, I would love to.
Oh, goodness. Well, he's a nut. You never know with him. He's always
well,
got stories, but I don't know if there's ghost stories.
Well,
yeah, truckers always seem to have some sort of a story up there.
They're very colorful people.
Absolutely.
And I did tell the people that they could, anyone who had a story to share, I said, you can email mm-hmm. it to me. And just write it down like you're telling a friend. You know, we'll fix any stuff like that, we'll take care of. So it's just like, just tell your story like you're sitting across the table from one of your buddies. And and then I also offer people the option of calling with their story. And then I tried transcribing these myself and then just gave up and found an excellent transcriptionist
mm-hmm.
who has been a godsend. So.
Yeah. Annie, getting back to your other books that you wrote, which would be Spirits Out of Time and House of Spirits and Whispers, can you tell us about those books and also kind of give us some experiences that you've had? I know that living in a haunted house like you do can be sort of unnerving at times. I know you have a different take on that because you love your house so much, but you're quite at home there, and I guess I've already filled in a lot of those blanks, but can you give us a couple of the experiences that has happened to you over the course of the last several years?
Sure. I have been here for 18 years, and over that time, I have come to get to know some of the main spirits associated with the house, and they are not here all the time, but they come and go. And so for the main house spirits, and then also some of my family spirits have visited, I would call that companionable and friendly kinds of contact. And it's really cool. I mean, it's really interesting to live in a haunted house when you have friendly spirits.
like, for instance?
Had,
Like Leon, for instance. I love Leon.
Yeah, Leon, okay. Okay, Leon is the old German Catholic fellow who lived here before my kids and I moved in. He was here for 33 years, I believe. He was a conservative, traditional guy, but very decent, extremely thrifty, according to the neighbors. And he had, when we moved in, we knew there was a ghost in the house. My house is an old Victorian. It was built as a single-family home on a very, you know, a nice street of big old houses. And I just fell in love with it because I had a tiny budget at the time. And I still do. So then in the 1930s, the house was turned into an upper-lower duplex. And then when Leon moved in 1962 or 63, he turned the downstairs into two apartments. So it was a triplex when I bought it. And he had lived in the back apartment. And as soon as the realtor and I walked in, we knew that the place felt very haunted. And we had looked at a lot of old houses, and only one other one felt haunted. But my realtor said, "Do you want me to find out if the old guy died here?" I said, "Yeah, that would be good." But Leon is the main, he was here because he had buried something important to him in the dirt room in the basement, which we found and gave back to his family. And then I thought he was going to go to the light. But he has stuck around. And over the years, I've come to view Leon as an ally in the spirit world. And this house is very energetically unusual. It has portals. It's a place where a lot of spirits come through, manifest. I have learned a lot. I used to work at Llewellyn, and anytime we had a psychic, an author who was a psychic in town, I invited them to my house to, you know, tell me what they thought. But between the psychics and the paranormal investigators and my own experiences, I have concluded that many spirits come and go through here, and not just spirits, but astral beings. But Leon, I work very hard to keep the energy of my home positive and bright and you know, cheery and all things that I like. And Leon, from the spirit side, I feel, helps protect this house. And so it feels like a really good partnership.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he likes he likes smoking cigars and pipes, correct?
Yes. And the way that's one way he communicates. He has a light in the kitchen that he turns off and on. And he, when we first moved in, he would pound on walls. But he doesn't do that very often anymore. He did that for some like 16, 18-year-old psychic investigators that were here. And when I heard I saw the video that they made, I was like, oh, my gosh, Leon, it's so good. It's like, I haven't heard you pound the walls for a long time, you know. It was just very loud and hollow and strange. It's like, it's kind of like nostalgic almost. So, weird things, the weirdest, some of the weirdest being pinned down in bed, that's something I couldn't see, that after I sat up and turned on the light, stuck its tongue in my ear. That was probably the worst thing that happened here. I saw little hooded beings beside my bed. It felt like the one that I was aware of at first was trying to pull my spirit out of my body. Now, I don't believe that something can pull your spirit out of your body. To me, it symbolized it was taking my energy. But I prayed and asked for protection and asked this being to be removed. And I saw it being like lifted. Imagine if you have a pencil sitting on a table and somebody picks it up and takes it away. It was like lifted up backwards through the ceiling of my room. And as it was being taken away, I saw that there were two more behind it. And that gave me more of a scare than just waking up and seeing this thing, because it's like one, because it was small, it didn't seem as threatening, but the fact that there were more made it much more threatening. Like maybe I could stave off one, but if it's got endless, you know, replacements, that's intimidating.
Right. Mm. Yeah, it's quite the house you live in, and I do know that your house and yourself have been featured on a national television program. What was the name of that again, Annie? That we watched.
The My Ghost Story. That's right. You're a different
right.
party. Yeah, My Ghost Story. I have links to it, I think. I'm pretty sure on my website and some other local TV shows, too, that we
were. Now, getting kind of away from the ghost a little bit here, and Robin, anytime you like, you can jump in. But we'd like to talk to you a little bit about your writing process. Tell us what the writing process is like for you. How did you become interested in writing? We know you just shared an experience where you sat down on your couch and wrote, but what got you into being a writer? What inspired you?
I always thought of myself as a writer from the time I can first remember. I wanted to write books. I wanted to write stories. I wanted to be a writer. I couldn't wait to learn how to read and write. I mean, I have 7 brothers and sisters, and 2 of them are older than me. And I was so jealous when they went to school because it's like, I want to learn to read and write. And I begged my mom to
Aww.
Teach me a book by memory. It was like a 120-page, you know, like sixth-grade
wow.
reading book. And my mom, who must have been very busy taking care of everybody, sat down with me to help me memorize. I think I made it through a page of the book. But when I was in school, the teachers would often have me read my stories to the class. I even wrote ghost stories then, some girls dying in a barn because they were playing with a Ouija board. But I have gone through many, many different phases in my life, and my main message is to writers, keep writing. Keep writing. I sent out query letters back in when I was a teenager and in my 20s. Everything that I proposed got rejected. Everything that I sent in got rejected. It got to a point where the rejections would have a personal note. You know, this is nice,
mm-hmm.
but it's not plus or not a good fit. And that was encouraging. But finally, at some point, I was like, you know what? I'm going to quit doing this. It just makes me feel bad. I'm just going to quit writing. I'm not wasting any more time on writing. And I thought that was a fine plan. But what I discovered was, for me at least, I can be a writer who is writing, or I can be a writer who is not writing, but I'm a writer. And being a writer who isn't writing is misery in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we all need for the story to get out, and I think sometimes it's sort of like it starts seeping out our pores, because when we have something important to share with, whether it be family, friends, or the general public, we feel compelled to tell the story. And I know there's stories running through my head here over the past several years that I would love to sit down and write. And of course, Robin and I had talked before the show about how we were struggling, or actually on the show about how we were struggling with our novels and getting them out. But you actually have to, like Annie says, write. Don't stop writing. Just get in there and do it. And it's especially invigorating when you do have that story that sort of pushes itself out of you. Living in a haunted house, for example, is probably the best way to get it out, because there's no other way to try to tell your story to people that may not even believe you. That's the other part, is to tell a story where a lot of the public are going to read your story and go, I'm sure you've gotten a lot of that, Annie.
Yeah, and that's a really good point to bring up, because I think younger writers that I know have been, you know, have expressed to me that they don't want people to criticize their work or think that it's dumb or whatever. I mean, they're more sophisticated in how they say it. But this is one of those cases where it does help to be old. And I don't care as much what people think. I have read reviews of my books. Some people love my books. Some people don't like my books. If people write a review saying they don't like the book and they give some supporting reasons, I respect that. I have seen some reviews. I should probably deal with this on Amazon, where you know, people have speculated that I use drugs, which I'm offended by because I am really opposed to illegal drugs, or that I needed money and that's why I wrote the book. And it's like, that's not at all true, and that's way outside of the kind of speculation. I mean, if you are reviewing the book, review the book and what you thought was a strength or, you know, a weakness of the book, but to do personal sort of insults.
Yeah.
That's just so...
I know Robin's dealt with that quite a bit, right, Robin?
Yeah. But there's, you know, there's bullies online, and I think that people, you know, they are brave when they're behind a computer screen, and they will say things that they normally wouldn't say if they were face-to-face, if they were standing in front of you. Like if they met you at a book signing, let's say, they would never say something like that to you. But they, people are, they're just so quick to write something so scathing and harsh and mean-spirited and completely unfounded, which is, that's the icing on the cake right there, so...
Exactly.
Yeah, I know.
I think if people are civil, I think being civil, you can express any opinion or any opinion and be civil about it, and that's fine.
And I
as
think
far as
also
not believing. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, we're getting some kind of feedback going on. What's I don't know if somebody has their volume on their or something's going on, but anyway.
Yeah, I'm not getting anything here, but I was going to say, Annie, that I think it's also important to know that when you go and meet an author at a book signing or a reading, that you get a better feel who the person is, and I can attest to that because I've met Annie on several occasions, at least three or four times, I think, and I will attest to the fact that I find her very well put together and not... a drug addict. In any case, man, she maintains a very, very nice home. It's obviously that she enjoys being there, and she's very, very nice lady. And I'm just saying that, Annie, because I expect you to send money to me. But I really would. That's a great point. I think until you actually meet the author in person, I think that's the other opportunity that a lot of people have that they don't check or they don't look at to sort of engage the author personally when they meet them. And I think that's the case here. But your books, I believe, are very well written. I've read all of them, and I really enjoy the stories in all of the books that you've written. I'd like to get back to, and I know you worked at Llewellyn, but can you get back to the writing of your book and the marketing of your books? Any pros or cons within that process that you would like to share with us?
Well, writing is one thing. And marketing is another. And I actually worked at Llewellyn for 13 years in the marketing department. And writing these days, and, you know, once the book is written and even before the book is published, marketing, I mean, I have mixed feelings about marketing. Part of me wants to just write books, send them off, and then forget about it, you know, and keep writing another book. But in today's world, social media is huge. Blog radio shows are huge. I'm going to be very honest. It's a mixed blessing because it takes a lot of time. Maybe not for people who are faster than I am, but I'm not that fast a typist, and I'm sort of deliberate in my, you know, thinking of posts and stuff like that. So it takes a lot of time to keep up and keep engaged. And plus I have three different Facebook pages right now, one personal Facebook page and then an Annie Wilder Facebook page and a Trucker Ghost Story Facebook page, which I did because I thought the Tea Party, you know, Victorian House crowd might be different than the Trucker Ghost Story crowd. I may merge them into just Annie Wilder at some point in the future, but it seemed like a good idea at the time. But the reach of these things is so unbelievable. It's like you just, if you're serious about marketing your book, and I do believe, at least for me, as long as I'm writing, I need to be given this 100%, you know, as far as getting the word out about my book. And, for example, some of the stories in my Trucker Ghost Story book came from people who had heard me interviewed on paranormal podcasts or Canadian Trucker radio show or, you know, different places like that. So it's very cool, too, like how far, you know, things go when you just have interview or chat with somebody. And 3 months later, someone in another country hits the button on their computer, you know, or whatever. Hey, you see how non-technological I am. And then they hear the story and then they get in touch with you. So it's I would say these days it would be almost crazy to not use Facebook at least and Twitter or a blog to connect with people that may be interested in your book and also to go on to talk to as many people with radio shows or blogs or things like that about your book as you can.
Yes, as someone once told me, is to put yourself out there and not be afraid and use all the tools that we have in technology today to promote yourself in your books. And I think you've done a pretty good job there, Annie, with that. I know there's a huge following there for Trucker Ghost Stories, and you've been working on that for several years. So you've got a pretty good fan base. What I would also like to ask you is, what's up next for you? Any more books planned?
Well, this is really interesting. Yes, I do have a book planned that I've been meaning to, and sort of working on for a year, meaning to write and sort of working on for a year. my first book, you know, I had given up on the idea of ever publishing a book because I had short stories that I had been working on for 20 years. My first book was done in 3 months. The second book, although it was much harder to gather and verify all this information, was done in 3 months, only because that's all the time I had left. Trucker Ghost Stories took a couple, almost 3 years to get everything together and done. My next book is I'm planning to write a Kindle single, a follow-up book about my house. I want to have the experience of self-publishing a book and doing it like a Kindle single, which is a shorter book. I need the discipline of a contract and a deadline. I have 4 Kindle singles started. 3 of them are ghost books, and 1 is just a collection of short stories. But I'm not anywhere near sending it into Amazon and having it come out. I had hoped to get it out this fall. So we shall see. It's just
very good.
Actually, just because I've written books doesn't mean that I can quickly write my 4th book. That's interesting to me. I thought it would be a piece of cake.
Like you say, you just gotta keep on writing and writing and writing and writing. And we're just a few minutes here left. Annie, I'd like to thank you for being on the show today. And tell everybody where they can find you on the Internet if they weren't paying attention in the first part of the show.
Okay, well, thank you very much for having me on the show, and Robin, you too.
You're welcome.
My website is a great place to go because then it has links right to my Facebook pages and Twitter, and you don't have to search. So the website is anniewilder.com.
Very good. Forget the www. Yeah. Everybody knows that now. Mm-hmm. We don't have to say that over. It gets kind of nauseating after a while. But once again, Annie, thank you so much for being on. We'll be paying attention to what comes from your mind and from your haunted house in the near future here. We will probably have you back at some point. And thank you for being on the Writer's Lounge. And we'll talk to you again.
Okay. Good night, you guys.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Okay, there's the first show of our Halloween session, Robin, and we will have more of that coming up with the next show, Jake Carter and the Nightmare Gallery, written by our friend Kevin Folliard, who will be on once again. He was on once again last year, and he will be on again.
I remember.
And you, my friend, you go out there and scare some people over the course of the next 2 weeks. And be lovely and entertaining about it, as you normally are. And we'll see you back again in a couple of weeks.
All righty.
Okay, and if say, Robin, I'm going to put you on the spot. What do we say on the Writer's Lounge?
I don't know. You put me on the spot.
Good.
You made
good
me go reading. Blank.
Good reading and good writing. We'll see
thank
you, back
you
next time. Okay, bye.
Bye. It's dark as night in the middle of the day. Your faith and your fences been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. But God spoke to Noah one beautiful morn. He said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. Like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun peeking. The rain will